Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, February 5th at 1:21. I call this meeting of House Resources Committee to order. Present with us are Representative Johnson, Representative Hawker, Representative Olson, Vice Chair Representative P. Wilson, Co-Chair Feige, myself, Co-Chair Sadler, and Representative Kawasaki is here as well. We do have a quorum to do business. There's none of our compatriots here. And a reminder to myself to kill cell phones because they do interfere with the wonderful PA system. As scheduled, this committee today will hear House Bill 207, Agriculture and Agricultural Loans. With note for the record that today we're going to have invited testimony only on this bill. Public testimony will be taken. Let me bring the bill up again shortly. So I will ask the sponsor to leave his rostrum and present the bill from the hot seat. I'm sorry, the committee chair. And if you can give your name for the record and present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Eric Feige, representing House District 6. And first thing I'd like to bring up is just kind of let everybody know what the intent of this bill is. There have been a number of issues that staff will get into as we present the bill that have raised concerns both from constituents as well as from legislative audits. And my overall intention with the bill is to help the agriculture industry, specifically the commercial agriculture industry, be more effective and be more in line with state government, and to help state government be more in line with the agriculture industry. The current Board of Ag and Conservation that we currently have under statute, under those statutes, is set up as a loan approval board for the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund. It does not have an advisory or regulatory role, and hence does not have an official, does not constitute an official channel of communication between the industry and state government. In our conversations with that board, it was noted that there are informal conversations, and certainly they provide advice either if requested or even unsolicited, but statutorily they do not have that that power. I think at this point we will there's been a number of concerns raised about the bill leading up to this hearing, and I think it's important for people that are listening online to make sure they are referencing the CS, which is a change to the bill as it's currently posted on BASIS. This CS is a result of my staff and I going around talking to both the Natural Resources Conservation Development Board, the Board of Ag and Conservation, as well as the State Farm Bureau, the Alaska Association of Conservation Districts. We did take a lot of those suggestions that were presented to us. There are some areas and some points in the bill that were, and quite frankly, are just policy calls, and we'll try to bring those out for consideration by the committee. We're certainly open to further changes. We've already identified several amendments that we should consider making in this bill, but just to reiterate, like in any legislative process, we certainly expect this to be worked through the committee process and amended as appropriate. So with that, I'll hand it off to my staff, Mr. Mike Pascal, and he will continue with the briefing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will. Yeah. Fight, before we actually get into the presentation of the bill by Mr. Pascal, it might be appropriate to for the committee to at least move to adopt the CS, so we're all reading from the same sheet of music here. So the chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we bring House Bill 207 Version C, which is a CS, before us for discussion.
Objection? All right, then we have the CS before us, and Mr. Pascal, you know the drill.
Thank you. For the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. And as Representative Feige indicated, we spent a good bit of time this year looking at recommendations from our base bill from last year to develop a committee substitute. And certainly there's still more work to be done through the discussion process, and that's what we're looking for. There were some concerns that have come out of various sources over the past. One is lack of formal communication between the agriculture industry and the state government. There are informal methods. There are certainly ways individuals, but there's no formal state group to recommend or suggest the policies of agriculture in Alaska and the state's position on agriculture. The Board of Agriculture and Conservation is limited in its membership in that if you're a successful farmer and you choose to borrow money from the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, at the time you apply or ever desire to restructure your loan, you would not be eligible for that board. I want to be clear, make sure it's clear, you can hold a loan and be on the board, but you can't apply for a one. So if you're on the board, you're a good productive member, you want to apply for a loan, you have to get off the board. Potential loan applicants, there have been several that have expressed concern that they don't like the idea of sharing their personal and business financial information with either their neighbor or competitor that might serve on this board. That when they submit the loan, the board has to review the loan, and they don't like the idea of having to share that information. There have been some suggestions that the soil and water districts are too autonomous and lack oversight from the state. There's no one with the authority to write regulations pertaining to the districts. And then the legislative audit that was done, both there was one this past year and there have been several in the past, had concerns about the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, which is managed by the Board of Ag and Conservation, and some of the concerns have been addressed in this bill. And then depletion of the ARLF capital would be, it has been an issue both through the loan fund and how it's managed, as well as activities that have taken place from both the executive and the legislative branch. What HB 207 will do is combine the two boards, the BAC, or the Board of Agriculture and Conservation, and the NRCDB, or the Natural Resources Conservation and Development Board, into a single board. It will be named the Board of Agriculture, Conservation, and Development. The new board would provide input to state agencies on agriculture, conservation, food production, land use, and also oversee the soil and water conservation districts. It would also serve as the managing group for the Alaska District, which is all the unorganized soil and water district areas. Moves Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund approval to the Department of Commerce with an appeal process to the back to the board and to the Commissioner of DNR. It's important to understand, because if you read directly in the language of the old bill and the CS, it's always been the intention that only the loan approval process gets moved. The management of the fund does not. And then it authorizes the new board to oversee the soil and water districts.
Question, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell me why you want only the approval process to be to the Department of Commerce and then the appeals process back? I mean, what is that going to accomplish, that one part right there?
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Wilson. The appeal process allows the
I understand the appeals process,
okay.
Moving the loan approval to the Department of Commerce.
Okay. Representative Wilson, through the chair. The issue of applying for a loan as an individual and not wanting to share financial information, as well as as a board member, you can't be on that board if you apply for a loan. So moving the loan approval process eliminates those conflicts And if you look at the audit that was performed this year, and the auditor's here to speak on that, the auditor recommends moving the entire fund. It's not our belief that that's in the best interest of agriculture. The policies of the loan fund need to be set by those in the agricultural industry. But by having the move, you have an oversight from another agency to make sure that you address that.
Thank you.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to Representative Wilson to also address something that's pertinent on that. One of the intentions here by improving the communication path is to get the best advice for state government. I believe we get the best advice by getting as many of the experts we have in our state that are people that are experts in their business and their industry. And by having the, if we left the loan approval function with the board, you would exclude a fair number of people, anybody that is really engaged in, you know, using the revolving loan fund to help finance their farming operations.
Yeah.
So by taking that loan approval and placing it somewhere else, and we looked at a number of different places to put it and settled on Commerce, you open up membership in that board to as wide a spectrum of talent as possible. And better expertise on the board, more a wider perspective, perhaps, gives better information to the state government.
Question, Mr. Goskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question just on the, you know, we have hundreds of boards and commissions, and I'm just wondering if you could tell me sort of the genesis of the agriculture and the Board of Agriculture and Conservation and how the Natural Resources Conservation Development Board came to be.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I can answer the Board of Agriculture and Conservation question very directly, and it came out of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund Board. It was essentially a rename and a change in structure. I do not remember the year, but it's been 15 or so years ago, maybe 20. The NRCDB, I cannot give you an exact reason as to its creation, and Deputy Commissioner Fogles is here, and he might could provide some background on that during his presentation, or either now, mm-hmm. to the chair.
But I'll go through. And for the record, actually, there's only about 120 some state boards. There might be lots of other municipal ones, but it may seem like there's hundreds, but please proceed.
Thank you. So the two boards that exist, the composition of the two boards, to give you an idea of the existing group, if you were to look at them, the Board of Agriculture and Conservation has four members that are in commercial production agriculture, one member from the Soil and Water Conservation District, one member from a statewide agricultural promotional organization, and one member with general business and financial assistance. So there's an overlap when you look at the NRCDB, which consists of five resident bona fide land users or cooperators from the five major land areas of the state. It also includes the commissioner and DNR or their designee, and it specifically states director of agriculture in this case, who is a non-voting member. So we took that mix of board members, combine them together into a new board. The current proposal is for 12 voting members on the board, which is the same number of members of the composition of the other two boards, five of which are engaged in commercial production agriculture, five land users or cooperators from the Soil and Water District, one member from general business or financial experience that is specifically not engaged in commercial production agriculture, and then one member that's experienced in preparation, storage, processing, marketing, or other items to food. It could be a grocer, a restaurateur, a wholesaler, or any number of different people that handle the food product after it leaves the farm, but again, specifically is not a farmer. And then three non-voting members, and those would be the commissioners of DNR, DEC, and then either the chancellor or a representative from the Cooperative Extension Service or the School of Natural Resources and Agricultural Sciences, which are those organizations are heavily involved in both agricultural and land use conservation practices. The current duties of the BAC primarily is to administer and make loans from the ARLF. They also adopt regulations to carry out the board's function to manage the ARLF. They can enter into agreements to carry out the duties of the board, and they can recommend land to be classified as agriculture through the land bank and the other divisions of DNR. So that's the essential purpose of the board. As you can see, the primary purpose of the current Board of Agriculture and Conservation is loan approval. The NRCDB duties advise the commissioner of DNR on the exercise of the powers, duties, and functions of the commissioner. Receive and review reports concerning the use of soil resources, public hearings, meetings to determine if land is being used in a manner consistent with sound soil and water conservation practices, and review conservation plans for the sale of agricultural land. Recommend action to provide for effective and orderly development of agricultural, forest, and grazing land. Review appeals regarding a sale, lease, of either agricultural or of grazing land, and then advise soil and water conservation districts in the state. And they also, as I mentioned before, serve as the Board of Supervisors for the Alaska District. And so if there's a conservation plan submitted for someone in the Alaska District, that's also reviewed by this board.
Mr. Pascal, are any of these duties of the NRCDB federally mandated? I know the Soil Water Conservation District program is a federal mandate originally. Is there any tie back to federal authority or responsibility in this board?
Chair Sadler, I would have to go back and look at the federal statutes, which has been some time since I've done. The concept of the soil and water districts is something that is required by USDA for the use of federal funds for agriculture within the areas the districts are established. So there are two districts in a So you have various districts in Alaska. For example, there's one in Fairbanks, there's one at Delta Junction, there's one in Matsu, there's one in the Copper River, there's one in the Kenai, there's one in Anchorage, and they go on and on. And by having those districts, then the producers in those districts are eligible for USDA funds. But the exact guidelines of what the districts have to be able to do is probably fairly vague because it's an old federal.
And what I'm getting to is I want to make sure that the new combined board does not abrogate any responsibilities or duties to the federal.
Okay. And that's a good point. And if you look at the new board duties, and you'll notice compared to the NRCDB in this case, we've actually added two duties and not taking any away. And that is that in addition to advising DNR, they would also advise DEC and Fish and Game, again, pertaining to land use and function of traditional soil and water district responsibilities. And then under number five, in addition to advising, we add that they would supervise the soil and water districts, which is done on an informal basis at this point. If you look at continue the duties and take the original duties we had of the Board of Agriculture and Conservation, in addition to administering the loan fund, you'll see they will review loan denial appeals. In addition to carrying out the regulations to adopt to the board's functions, they'll write guidelines or regulations for approvals from the ARLF. And then one additional item we added, which is making recommendations to the University of Alaska Cooperative Extension Service and the School of Natural Resources and Agricultural Sciences for programs and activities that will further the promotion, regulation, and protection of agriculture in the food industry and broaden the economic base of the state, which is, again, where we started with this. We need a board to make formal recommendations to the other agencies and the parts of state government that work with agriculture and food production.
Representative Feige has a question or a comment?
Just a comment, getting back to the whole communication aspect and trying to improve communication. By including the Cooperative Extension Service helps keep the information that state feels is important, keeps that, helps provide direction to the Cooperative Extension to help get important information out to the farmers and to the rest of the industry.
Thank you.
And lastly, the board advises the Commissioner of Natural Resources, Environmental Conservation, and Fish and Game on promotion, regulation, protection of agriculture and food industry to broaden the economic base of the state and to protect consumers, and we listed different policy items including agriculture, land use, resource conservation, food safety and security, pesticides and herbicides, noxious and invasive plants, animals and pests, animal care, forestry, and mariculture. That gives us basically the duties that and the function that we put through. You'll see several physical notes. Unfortunately, it falls across multiple funding sources with the new board and the old boards. So under your physical notes, you'll see one for both commerce, environmental conservation, and two from DNR. I want to kind of summarize these to look at kind of the net effect of all four physical notes. I didn't look at the current fiscal year in that it gets pieces of the year involved, so I wanted to look at whole years. So if you look at fiscal year 16, DEC is saying that there's no cost to their role in this new board. Commerce says that there's no net cost because the charges that they would or the cost they would incur would be billed back to DNR on the loan approval process, and I'll address that a little more in just a second. Currently, the Natural Resources Conservation Development Board has $116,500 that's allocated out of the general fund to that board. And then under the new proposed board, the estimate for fiscal year 16 is $173,800, and for fiscal year 17 is $156,500. So the difference, once you take the individual components from the different budget items and combine them together, is an additional cost in the fiscal year 16 of $57,300. $17,300 of that was the estimate for writing new regulations, and the remaining $40,000, which is the only part that remains in fiscal year 17, is the cost of loan approval based upon the number of loans and the services provided by Department of Commerce. And in discussions with the Department of Commerce and the director of the division that's appropriate for this is here to discuss the physical notes, he'll be able to address that we believe that under the CS this number would be even less than the amount that was currently in the physical note.
For the record, we've been joined by Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr.
So that's the basic pieces of it. At the 116.5, it is important to note if you look at the component 2633 of the fiscal note, on that note, which is one from conservation and development, it's specified in the notes, but it does not show up on the front of the fiscal note for some reason. And they're trying to clarify and have had some discussions, and I think Deputy Commissioner Fogles could speak about that as well. So last but not least, just looking at the advantages that we see these changes make, and conceptually there might be some adjustments to be made, but the new Board of Agriculture, Conservation, and Development provides an efficient and formal avenue for communications between farmers and land users and the administration. That results in farmers and land users with having more input into administration policy. Loan approvals for the ARLF can be handled faster and with more efficiency and with common underwriting requirements. Less meetings will allow improved efficiency within administration and realize modest cost savings, and then less funds would be removed from the ARLF for administrative purposes, retaining more of the ARLF's capital. And be happy to address some of those, and also prepared to do a sectional analysis of the CS.
We have a supplemental comment, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One key thing I want to point out, in addition to improved communications, improves the customer service for the handling of loans. Right now, if a fellow submits an application, he has to wait at least 30 days and then until the next board meeting, whenever that is scheduled. So there can be significant delays up to one or more months where the applicant for a loan is simply waiting for a decision. By having it over in the Department of Commerce, we expect that loan approval turnaround time will be measured in a matter of weeks instead of months.
Okay. For committee members, I'll note that in addition to the sponsor and the staff, we have a couple of folks here in person to answer questions. Chris Curtis of Legislative Auditor, our Legislative Auditor, along with on teleconference Linda Day and Anna Chernick, Legislative Auditors, also Deputy Commissioner Fogles, Joe Jacobson of Economic Development, and Legislative Legal, we have Hillary Martin, and Shauna Joy from NRCDB, Lyle Brazier of the Delta Farm Bureau, and Francie Havemeister, Division of Ag, is also available online. But at this point, questions for the presenter or the sponsor? Oh, okay, well, I've got one then. Mr. Pascal, you listed out some of the duties of the proposed combined board under policies relating to a long list of ag, land use, resource conservation. Are there any sideboards or limitations? We have mariculture, forestry, animals, invasive plants. Those are fairly broad policy areas. Are there any limitations to what they can advise on?
Co-Chair Sadler, I believe the limitations fall basically into the existing definitions that are in statute, except in the cases where we've written new definitions. Some of the items are already defined from that standpoint of what encompasses those particular items. If you're looking for where if you're looking on limitations, I'm not sure I can give you specific limitations other than to say it's an advisory role, so they're making suggestions on what would benefit the ag industry as it pertains to those particular areas. And so if you look at the preceding, I guess it would be paragraph, it's promotion, regulation, and protection of protection of agriculture, okay, and food industry. I was making sure I got the right words there. So with that case, if it's beyond that scope, it would be beyond what the purpose of the board would be in making the recommendations.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of procedurally, are we going to do a sectional analysis? Are you going to let him walk through that? I mean, you don't need to, but if you do, I can ask the question when he gets there. If not, I can ask it now. So whatever the pleasure of the...
Been prepared, so let's do that. Let's go through the sectional analysis, and I guess if your question is answered,
section,
if not...
Section 4, we will stop.
Okay.
you do have a sectional analysis prepared by Legislative Legal Services?
Yes,
and so if there are questions, legal services online, if there's specific detailed questions. Section 1 essentially establishes the new board and eliminates the existing board, as well as defines the membership of the board. Section 2 deals with a specific limitation that's in statute now that says that members of the BAC cannot obtain loans, and so that is changed to specifically allow them to obtain loans or do the processing of loans while they're on the board, since the loan approval is now handled by Commerce. Section 3 addresses the meetings of the board and requiring the board to meet 4 times per year, once here at the Capitol, and then also specifying that the other meetings can't all be held in the same location, giving producers and land users the ability to access the board in person throughout the year. Section 4 is a new section addressing the powers and duties of the board, and I think I've gone over most of these during the earlier presentation to the details, and I understand there's a question there, so we'll see if we can...
I'm on the wrong section. Keep going.
Okay. But it does spell out, and there are some new powers in there, as well as the existing powers of the two boards combined together. Section 5 makes the director of the Division of Ag responsible for the overall management and policy of the ARLF falling under the board. Mm-hmm. Section 6 requires 5 voting members of the board to constitute a quorum. Section 7 allows the board to adopt regulations to carry out its duties, including establishing fees. Section 8 makes a confirming amendment just referencing the new board. Section 9 defines agriculture for purposes of this chapter, and also references that the board, anytime the board term is used in this chapter, refers to this new board. Section 10 adds a new section pertaining to loans from the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. and requires the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to approve the loans from the funds. And it also spells out the existing types of loans, and most of those, if not all of that language, is in existing statute of the types of loans and those details. That's not something we've attempted to change in this process.
Representative Kawasaki, a question?
Yeah, a question. I'm sorry. It goes back to Section 7 dealing with the... No, I'm sorry, not Section 7. Maybe I'm on the wrong one. Establishing reasonable fees for service provided and charges for collecting the fees. Are we in version C? Am I on that right?
Section 7.
Yeah.
Okay, it is Section 7. Okay. how is it, or the board doesn't currently maintain a system of fees now, then, and what sort of envisioned? Is it sort of a, it's not a receipt-supported board, so I'm just kind of curious what that would include. Or what's it for? How about what's it for?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, the ARLF requires an application fee to apply for a loan, as do almost all of the state loan programs that are managed by Commerce. And it's this language is part of the existing statute. It's just being moved to a different portion of statute, but it is part of existing statute.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. On page 5 of the bill, line 9, it reads, the board will be able to enter into agreements with private lending institutions, other state agencies, or agencies of the federal government to carry out the purposes of this chapter. Was that in it before?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, that language, if not exactly that way, is already in statute. It allows the board to enter into contracts to carry out its purpose. The best example I might could give is the board might choose to sell a loan or purchase a loan from another agency and move it in or out of the fund. For example, if the board had a loan in the fund, and maybe Commerce could address this a little better, but if they had a loan in the fund and the loan was the type that would be available and be serviceable and sellable on the open market, they could sell the loan, thus gain capital back to put back into the fund to loan to somebody else because it's a really good loan. But again, without the specific authority to do that, they would not be able to do it if the opportunity arose.
Please continue.
Thank you.
Okay, I believe Section 10 is where we were, 10 or 11. Anyway, 10 just sets out that the loans, as I already said, can be approved by Commerce and the types of loans. Section 11 removed a reference to the fixed rate of interest on a farm development or chattel or irrigation loan, and it essentially set the rate at something that's actually the minimum rate is something higher than what's the current rate being offered for all other loans. So we tied the loan rate to the prime interest rate that is percent. Section 12, again, just changes the reference from the board to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Again, 13 changes the reference from the board to the Department of Natural Resources. Section 14 removes a reference to fixed rate interest on the farm processing loans. And Section 15 deletes language pertaining to the parameters of interest loans on board as well. Section 16 allows the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to restructure certain loans under the guidelines approved by the loan, and that's essentially an old statute that was in place, and as I understand, there's one loan that qualifies under that still that's outstanding with the ARLF, but it was for some early loans that were issued and allowed to restructure. Section 17 just requires funds assigned for proceeds that come in as overpayments on loans to be returned or deposited into the ARLF.
And Mike, that's proceeds, is that interest, or without reading through the section again?
Okay. In Section 17, there are a couple of pieces there, but basically the existing language that's already there says that a loan payment goes into the ARLF, so that would include principal and interest. There's also a provision under Part 2 there that in some cases, federal payments must be assigned to the loan fund, and it provides a provision that those loan funds collected that are assigned would be collected and deposited into the ARLF versus the general fund, because it's to ensure a payment to an outstanding loan.
And currently, are payments of principal interest go to the general fund or go to the ARLF?
They currently go to the ARLF. Okay. There are no structural changes of that type that we're proposing.
So this, I'm sorry, is this section redundant, or what, when, why is it specifically added?
Sorry, Chair Sandler, most of the language, as you can see in that, is existing statute. It was amended to refer to the department versus the Board of Agriculture and Conservation. In this case, the use of the word department refers to DNR. And then in part two, it was just to better clarify what was already in statute to make sure that it answered the question, that there wasn't future interpretation questions.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Other questions? Nope. All right, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. is there anything in the bill that normally would go to the general fund that now is not going to the general fund? Now, I can see if it's a certain loan that needs to be taken care of or something, but is the general fund in the end going to see less money in the general fund that it normally wouldn't at the end of the day?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I don't believe so. There was no intention to change the funding other than to realize that currently the primary and most important purpose of the BAC is to administer the ARLF. They spend most of their meetings reviewing loan applications, and that funding comes out of the ARLF. The new combined board isn't reviewing loans, so there's a slight shift there, as we noticed on that slide. I'd be happy to go back to on the finance. So, but the payments that the money comes out of the ARLF for loans, the payments go back into that. Fees come out of the fund to administer the loans. Service fees that are charged, for example, for an application fee would go into the fund. So there are no changes in that type of structure.
Great. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Section 18 just is moves this section to a different location from where it was originally, that says if there's an overpayment of the proceeds collected in the previous section, they go back to the loan holder. Section 19, again, just a reference to the board, from the board to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Section 20 deals with non-farm use. And just again, just the definition and conforming language correction. 21 allows the legislature to appropriate money from the fund for cost of administering the funds. ASO3 is a revolving loan fund. So it allows those appropriations to be made, which is current language. It requires the board to administer the ARLF. And again, looking at that, that is existing language with some slight adjustments made pertaining to the name of the board and then also the emergency loans, because the committee would not have to appoint a subcommittee in order to meet to expedite emergency loans. They would be handled through the same process and dealt with on an expedited basis through Commerce.
Is that going to be, that emergency authority, is that going to be something that the current structure will miss? I guess I'll ask that question later. That's
right. Representative Sabo, I make it adjusted a little bit. Under the current process, as Representative Faye said earlier, if you apply for a loan, you have to turn in the paperwork 30 days before the board meets. Mm-hmm. So it's at least 30 days. If you need a loan faster than that, then there's a provision to allow three members of the board to review a loan, and so it's not necessary because the board isn't meeting to review loans. So it just removes the necessity of that doing that.
Okay.
Section 23 adds a new subsection and pertains to the interest rates of the loan and allows the board to set the rate at a lower level under certain circumstances that they would predefine. So it's not applying to a specific loan. It would be applying to a policy to promote agriculture in a certain area, either geographically or in a production area. Section 24 spells out the definitions of agricultural, board, and department in this chapter. 25 through 34 is, again, nothing but conforming language dealing with the fact that we're moving some of the functions from the Board of Agriculture and Conservation to the Department of Commerce. And let's see. Section 35 changes the definition of board in this particular section to the Board of Agriculture, Conservation, and Development versus its old reference. 36 is the repealers. 37 provides a transition from the two existing boards to the new board. And Section 38 allows the agency to adopt regulations prior to the change in boards actually going into effect. 39 sets out the immediate effective dates for those two previous sections, and then 40 provides an effective date of January 31st, 2015 for the remainder of the bill.
Great. Thank you. A lot to go through quickly. Any questions on any of those sections that did yours come up? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Since we incorporated them all, I didn't know exactly where it fit. I thought I'd let him get to it all. I'm always concerned when we have boards. And I see five members to make a quorum, and five members from any segment make up the portion of the bill as required. So I conceivably you could have five members from one segment of this board get together and make all the decisions.
Representative Johnson, through the chair. I think in speculating through it, you are correct. There have been some discussion in the last few days about the composition of the board, the numbers on the board, and the quorum on the board. And I think that's something that could be addressed to eliminate that specific problem through a CS to be prepared for the next committee.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And the makeup, the other solution to this problem is to allow telephonic attendance. Any thought been given to that?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that as well has been specific. We prepared some draft amendments, but we're not prepared to bring them forth at this point unless there's a desire to change. But that is one of the changes that we would look at in incorporating into a CS, another CS. So, but again, both of those are certainly easily done.
Okay. And thank you, Paul. So what's the interest rate?
Representative Johnson.
Different question, Mr. Chairman. What's the interest rate?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, the current interest rate for loans?
How's it established?
It's established based upon a rate similarly charged by private institutions providing agricultural loans in Alaska, which inherently has a problem because of the lack of private institutions providing agricultural loans in Alaska. It usually runs very similar or slightly under the rate offered by the Alaska Rural Rehabilitation Corporation and the Farm Services Agency. The audit has a breakdown of them, and in some cases it's higher, in some it's lower, depending on the exact type of loan.
I got a follow-up question if you want to consider.
Well, I'm trying to, we've dealt with something similar to this, and there was a prime plus or prime minus with a floor established. And I'm wondering if it would behoove us to, I mean, I know there's not a lot of people that offer agricultural loans, so it's probably easy to get a rejection letter. So would it behoove us to in statute look at setting some kind of ceiling floor? And, you know, I'm not terribly interested in going, you know, subprime, but I am interested in having some kind of guidelines as laid out there so we're not. I mean, if interest goes to 12 or 14%, we ought to be able to help farmers by something less than that. If it goes to 2%, we don't want to pay them to take out a loan. So some kind of, and I see the sponsor may have.
To that point.
This is not an unfamiliar argument.
Representative Buggy.
I believe we were in another committee discussing exactly the same thing.
Recently, yeah.
Yesterday. In talking with
the member who is not here, he raised that very issue, and we do have an amendment prepared along those lines that would provide a minimum interest rate so that the administrative costs of the fund would be guaranteed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. It appears that someone is reading my mind on all of my questions, and that scares me a little bit.
It should scare them a lot.
It's large type.
It's in another committee.
Yeah. I do want to say how important I think it is for boards to have the proper makeup that allows no particular segment of the board makeup to control that board. I think you can do that several ways, either through the makeup or just allowing telephonic, require a minimum of three people in person, everyone can phone in. I mean, there are a lot of ways to skin that cat to where you can get participation. The other question I have, and more of a statement, is I don't like even numbered members on a board. And this has 12. And I don't know who you sacrifice or who you add, but a 12-member board is, you know, or a four-member board or any even number is, you know, ripe for concern. So I would like to see maybe address an odd number of members on the board. Not an odd board, but an odd member, an odd number of members.
You have to be a little odd to want to serve
in a board. Well, I'm certain, being on one of these boards, you'd have to have a certain oddity.
Thank you. Representative Wilson's next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't remember, but it was like in Section 5 or somewhere. Don't remember which section, but it said that they had to have four meetings a year and one had to be in Juneau. And why does one have to be in Juneau when most of those, I would assume that most of the people would be in the Rail Belt area or somewhere?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, one of the important considerations on the board was to make sure that the board is represented across the state so that agriculture and conservation issues we have people on the board familiar with all of the different areas of the state to provide that opportunity. That's an existing requirement on the Natural Resources and Conservation Development Board. It is also an existing requirement that the board meet at the Capitol once a year. I think it's common for numerous boards to do that. As I looked through the boards and some of their, several boards meet in the Capitol for obvious reasons. The legislature is here part of the year, as well as certain offices might be here. For example, in the case of this board, the loan people are here, for example, although they have an office in Anchorage. I think the main office is here. So if they wanted to interact face-to-face, it's one mechanism for doing that. We also eliminated them being able to meet more than twice in one judicial district, and by doing that, it forces the board to come out to the individuals that are impacted by the board and have them have the opportunity to be face-to-face with the board versus over teleconference, which has its limitations no matter how good it is. And if you look at the existing boards, I know that the NRCDB has met in a couple of different locations, but as far as I'm aware, the BAC has only met in Palmer. I could be incorrect, but I don't remember the last meeting where they held it somewhere else.
Next, Representative Hawker.
I'm going to do my best to try to simplify a very complicated concern into something even I understand. I want to pull out of the minutiae, board members and details, back to what are we really doing here, the macro. And as I read statute and look at this, we have a number of pieces at play here. We've got the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund. We have the what used to be the Natural Resource Conservation and Development Board. And then we have the Board of Agriculture and Conservation that is being renamed. And we are moving all the duties that were formerly in that Soil and Water Conservation Board into the new Board of Ag. Mm-hmm. As I look through statute here, the Board of Soil and Water Conservation, which would be wiped out in this bill, if we go to the repealer sections, it goes away, and its duties are merged into the Board of Agriculture. Now, that Soil and Water Conservation Board was established in Title 41 in 1949. Gotta admit, that's one of the first statutes I think I've ever encountered working in the legislature. It was back in 1949. That Soil and Water Conservation Board is in the Title 41 on public resources. It has very, if the sponsor wants to interrupt me and take a different direction, I'll cede the floor.
I think, yes, it was established in 1949, but that's when Soil and Water Conservation Districts, as a result of the Great Dust Bowl, were established after World War II. So it's in conjunction with those districts, you know, the establishment of the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, not simply because some, you know, we decided to do it here in Alaska.
And Representative Hawker, are you referring to the Alaska District or the Alaska Soil and Water Conservation District?
I was not referring to any Soil and Water Conservation Districts. I was talking about Title 41, Chapter 10 on Soil and Water Conservation.
You referred to the Board of Soil and Water Conservation.
And that is the board that was established under Chapter 10 of Title 41.
And the proper name one more time is?
Is the Natural Resource Conservation and Development Board.
Okay.
That is the board that is going away in this legislation. It was established back in 1949.
Yep.
The specific duties of that board, which are very broad, and they go to the management of soil and water in the state, conservation of soil and water resources in a broad manner, under the title of statutory title of public resources.
Mm-hmm.
That board, with its broad responsibilities established back in 1949, is being eliminated and merged into the Board of Agriculture and Conservation. You know, it's not just soil and water, it is into the narrow focused Board of Agriculture Conservation and massively expanding that board. That Board of Agriculture and Conservation exists in Title III of our statutes. Title III is the title of Agriculture, Animals, and Food. So we are moving the duties of a board that go very broadly about the management of soil and water conservation issues across the state of Alaska into a title and into a board that is specific to agriculture, animals, and food. And I'd like to point out that within the Title III on agriculture, animals, and food, the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund in Title III, the ARLF in Title III, was established back in 1953, and it was really the core of the development of agriculture as it has been described here. And I'm not getting in any way, shape, or form to the merits or demerits of any of these issues, but that revolving loan fund, which was decided under the Alaska Agricultural Loan Act, which is Chapter 10 of Title III, that act, I believe, well, it was initially passed in 1953. And it was specifically to, needless to say, you know, benefit and develop agriculture, animals, and food in the state. Very narrow focus, and it really was not about conserving, managing the broader topic of soil and water resources in the state, which is under Title 41 of Public Resources. As the bill moves, well, then subsequent to all of this, well, we had the Agriculture Revolving Loan Act operating over there in the Agriculture, Animals, and Food title. from 1953 on, and we've had the Soil and Water Conservation Board functioning its broad duties to the state since 1949 on, over in its part of the world. Along we came in the year, and I think it was, if I'm reading this right, the year 2000, this Board of Agriculture was created. That was in the year 2000. And again, if anyone can prove me wrong, that's fine, but I'm just trying to read out a statute here. In the year 2000, it's the newcomer. It's the late kid on the block. And it has one and only one real function that I can find, and it's in Title III, the Board of Agriculture and Conservation established, and talks about members and terms and stuff, but if I may cite, sir?
Yes, you may read.
The Director of Agriculture and Staff, and this is the only place I can find in statute that creates a direction to the current Board of Agriculture, is responsible for the daily operations of the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund.
Correct.
That's basically all it does. It's in the Department of Ag. The Agriculture and Conservation Board runs the Revolving Loan Fund. Mm-hmm. Came along in the year 2000 after the fund had been in place since 1953. And now, you know, it all the pieces in play here, and there's been a very long history of concern with how well the Board of Agriculture has managed and operated in this state. It goes back, if I recall, about 2003 when I was elected here. Mm-hmm. There was a audit, frankly, it was just a scathing audit about mismanagement within the ARLF, the Board of Agriculture. I frankly don't know how well they've improved. I know we've got a current audit that indicates there's still some serious concerns that go back an indefinite period of time. So setting the stage with all the moving pieces, I am wondering why, when we have a board that appears to have been consistently dysfunctional, it's a latecomer to the process, that we're moving all of the responsibilities onto the dysfunctional board, arguably dysfunctional board, that was created recently, rather, and taking all the responsibilities for soil and water conservation across the state and moving it into the title on agriculture, animals, and food. It just seems to me that we're doing something wrong here. I can't put my finger on it. Animals, agriculture, and food would seem to, again, still remain a very narrow focus within the state, an important focus, but a narrow focus of one industrial segment in the state, where the board that's being eliminated has a much broader charge in Title 41 of being responsible for truly water and soil conservation issues broadly across the state that substantially exceed just those responsibilities of a board charged with and I think the word promoting might be a good choice of words, promoting agriculture. So we're taking a regulatory board, one that is responsible for protecting, with all respect, I think protecting water and soil conservation, and moving it into a board charged with economic development and specifically one small sector of our state's economy. I don't know if the structure of the bill's right. You know, I think, you know, there's clearly problems with the Board of Ag, the way it's been operating and the way the audits have repeatedly shown, and I know that no doubt we need to be addressing this. I just don't know if this bill gets us to where we want to be. Let it stop at that at the moment. I've got a long way to go to try to get my arms around this and get comfortable with changing what's effectively what I believe is a regulatory responsibility, putting it into an advocacy board for one specific industry.
If we wanted to play Jeopardy and put that in the form of a question, would that be what would be the essence of your
yes,
question?
Yes. Am I any more close in my understanding of what's going on here?
Representative Hawker, through the chair. It took me a minute to follow the complete thought, but I think I follow the the thought process that you're going through there, and most of it I agree with 100%. One important part of it is the NRCDB, as I understand it, is not regulatory. It's only advisory in capacity. So that's
not a quasi-judicial board.
No, it is. My understanding is not, and Hillary Martin's on the line. I'd prefer that to her, either the commissioner. The structure of where the board is placed was something that was totally done by legal, so I'm going to defer that to let her interject on that particular question. But I do want to point out that if you look through the repealing and the revision and the addition of statutes, it's all in 03, 38, 39, and 41. That the board, though, apparently, and again, let her address, has to be placed somewhere, and by whatever mechanism she chose, it was 03, and that's something I'll defer, and maybe she could speak to that question.
At this point, I'm going to exercise the chair's privilege and invite Shauna Joy from the NRCDB, or I don't know if Ed wants to answer, just to have a brief explanation of what the NRCDB is, its composition, activities, authorities, and what kind of issues it actually has been dealing with in the last 20 years. Mr. Phobos.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ed Phobos, Deputy.
Just a little bit.
Turn the volume up a little bit. Since I was here last. For the record, my name is Ed Phobos, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. And as part of my duties within the department, I do oversee the Executive Director for the Natural Resources Conservation and Development Board, and interact with that board. That board is charged with giving advice to the commissioner and performing his duties. They meet four times a year. They're tremendously valuable in the advice they give. I participate myself with the board. Commissioner Sullivan has participated before he left, and so they do provide us advice. They provide the Soil and Water Conservation District's advice, and they are our sort of link between that sort of management of the districts. They're a good board. They're hardworking folks. We've been really looking to try and figure out ways to make them to be even more of an effective of a board. I think that's hopefully that answers your question, Mr. Chair.
Could you speak, Mr. Fogel, specifically? Soil and water conservation has an agricultural application. Right. Would you characterize the board's work as being primarily resource conservation or agriculture or food production? Or where does its work usually come down?
Mr. Chair, it's a broad spectrum. I think it crosses over to both. I mean, soil and water conservation districts themselves, they do a tremendous variety of tasks on the ground. I've become a huge fan of the districts in my tenure here. They're sort of a quasi-governmental agency. They're the kind of group that can go to the shed, pick up the tools, go out and do something. They get grant monies. Some of it's conservation, preventing erosion, rebuilding culverts that are failing. Some of it's more agricultural work. They look at the farm conservation plans and give advice. They have a broad arena that they give us advice on, including agriculture and land and water conservation issues.
And with to that point, Representative Hawker, yeah.
To that point, these soil and water conservation districts were created under also the 1949 statutory authority. These things have been around a long time ago, and that particular board was established in that same chapter. That's 4110-130. 4110-100 is the duties of this board, which has a great deal to do with supporting those 1949, those districts created under the authority created in 1949 that go all across the state, even into my own district, mm-hmm. where, probably the biggest thing we grow is herbs in somebody's flower pot, but we've also got a lot of wetlands and a lot of issues that those soil and water conservation districts are hugely influential and important in, mm-hmm. where I deal with hillside drainage and erosion, development of roads, far, far, far beyond agricultural responsibilities, mm-hmm. and far different. Right. And not to put a relative merit to the two, but right. far different.
Oh, that's great. Would, Mr. Fogles, would there, in your opinion, would there be a diminution of the this combined board's, the BAC's, ability to fulfill the functions that Representative Hawker has so ably described of the Salt and Water Conservation Districts around the state?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think, you know, our reading of this bill, it's sort of, you have a new board and it's got a new name, but the duties all seem to be there for doing the jobs that that we need them to do. In our read of the bill, it really depends on workload, and so you have a board of agriculture now that that's primary workload is loan approval, and I just want to just say that I've spent a lot of my time going to board of agriculture meetings. I try and attend them every chance I can. I sit through the executive sessions and I watch the board go through that process, and I just want to, you know, on the record, this is one of the hardest working boards that we have in the state. And my hat's off to those board members, and especially the current board members. Very hardworking, very tough decisions sometimes. But because of that, you know, this bill would relieve them of that duty, so then their duties would change, and then they would be providing myself and the commissioner advice on agricultural issues. So depending on that workload, they're going to be taking on the workload of, in my view, they'd be taking on the workload of the current Natural Resources Conservation and Development Board also. And I do believe that that could be workable.
A question from Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is really directed toward Representative Feige. The letter that was from the Fairbanks Soil and Water Conservation District that was against this, mm-hmm. And now their concern was that it would, House Bill 207, as it is written, would dilute the desires of those we serve and radically change the mission and the operation of soil and water districts across the state. Now, they may not understand fully at the time they wrote this, I don't know, but it was January 31st, but I was just, in your opinion, would that happen, or would there be, I just think that the possibility, have you talked with him, I guess,
we've talked to the folks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. We've talked to the folks on the board, the NRCDB, and we've talked to the Alaska Association of Conservation Districts, which is sort of the umbrella organization for the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. It is not our intent to diminish the information and the advice that is currently provided by the NRCDB to the state. That's why we've kept a lot of the all of the responsibilities that they currently have under the new board. Some of the language in this bill is designed specifically to actually give more power to the board, either in terms of writing regulations or supervising districts, and there's a reason for that. It's a policy call on I guess on my part. We're looking to these people on this board to be the resident experts, you know, to know far more and have a more diverse opinion about either the soil and water conservation issues or the agricultural issues across the state. And it's my intent to put as much influence and authority with the board as we possibly can, because I think that gives the industries as a whole a much greater say in state government and government's policies. So that's what we've tried to do with this bill. Certainly it is a change from what is currently there, but I don't believe we diminish the influence of the existing board structures. I believe we enhance it, and we offer a much greater voice for industry as a whole to be able to provide input to the state government. One thing to note about agriculture in Alaska, if you look at the total dollars generated by the agricultural industry, it is in a decline, a gradual, steady decline. So we can either continue to stay on that path, or we can try to change it so that we perhaps offer a greater voice to some of the new ideas that are out there, to some of the new areas of the state that are looking at agricultural development to boost their economies, and to get more utilization out of areas in the state that are currently underutilized.
That's a follow-up.
Representative Wilson.
Okay, in the process of doing this, there's going to be all new elections for instead of the same people going, because of the same numbers and everything, instead of the same people going from these boards and going on and continue, you're going to change it all. I just didn't know if there were personality problems and that maybe that we needed just a different big board or what.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who the governor appoints to this new board is up to the governor, and that's typically the prerogative that we have in the state. I would hope that people currently serving on this board would continue, because they would certainly bring expertise to the new board. To echo Deputy Commissioner Fogel's point about the current, especially the Board of Ag and Conservation, they have done a lot of work, and they have done good work. And I think they have improved within the statutory parameters that they operate under. I think they've done a lot to improve the way the ARLF is managed and some of the requirements for loans. But I think they need to have more statutory or more regulatory authority and a more formal voice to advise the Department of Natural Resources and the DEC and the Fish and Game, so that our government can function and address the concerns of the industry in a much more effective way.
Next round, Representative Wilson, follow up.
No, thank you. I appreciate it, and I wanted to have that on the record. So I think that's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative
Kawasaki. Thanks. I think we're sort of getting off topic debating the bill. I know there's some folks that might be online that can testify, and I had a question earlier regarding the purpose or the genesis or the history of the Natural Resource Conservation Development Board. I mean, I share similar concerns when we're sandwiching two boards and two different parts of statute and how those will work out if we're not missing something. But I know there's somebody online that might be able to comment. Or if you can. On sort of the genesis of that board?
Well, Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I'll let you know what I know, what I was told by Ms. Shauna Joy is our executive director for the Natural Resource Conservation Development Board, and as she explained it to me, I think Representative Hawker was right on. The genesis, actually, you go all the way back to the 1930s and the Dust Bowl days, and President Roosevelt created a national law encouraging states to create soil and water conservation districts to get out there, get their hands dirty, and fix the resources in the soil. In Alaska, the territorial legislature created the Alaska Conservation Board back in I believe 1947 probably, and sometime in that time frame. And at some point, I'm not sure when, it changed to the Natural Resources Conservation and Development Board, but the districts actually were created about that same time. Maybe some of the districts have been around since 1940 or so. So they've been around for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Again, their purpose is to go out there and just get down there and be very quick, agile responders to fixing natural resource issues that are in their area.
So follow-up?
So if
part of the purpose of the districts then is to sort of have an agile, be quick.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't want to debate the legislation yet, but is it conceivable that it would be more difficult now that there's a board and administration through this loan fund that's dealt with through the administration?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I mean, for me, for my purposes, as long as I have the proper resources and a good board, I believe I can make it work. I don't know that there would be that much of a change. I mean, the issues that we see with the soil and water conservation districts isn't so much their management, it's their resources that they have available. They get very little state hard money. We give them about $2,500 a year in operating funds, each of the 12 districts. The rest of their money comes from grant monies, whether through the federal government or just grants. And some of the districts are very good at getting grants, and they're very successful, and some have 30 staff on board. Other districts, aren't quite as successful as bringing in that money, but we can give them assistance to do their work. But bottom line, a district is really as good as the energy of the people that are within the district and their drive. And so the management through a board, we can help them certainly, but that, in my view, is not the main driver for their success or failure.
Thank you.
Thank you. To that point, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could refer folks to the bill, page 5, line 4. And this is an aspect of the bill that has generated a lot of interest, shall we say. The words "to advise and regulate the soil and water conservation districts in the state." The new word is, the addition to that is regulate. And again, by putting regulate and including it as part of the powers of the board, you're essentially making sure that the people from the industry have say over what happens in those soil and water conservation districts, as opposed to leaving it unclear and open to interpretation. For the record, it is not my intention to upset the apple cart in the way soil and water conservation districts work. The word regulate can be a little bit of regulation. It can be a lot of regulation. But by putting it into the bill here, you put the destiny of those soil and water conservation districts in the hands of people from the industry and from the districts across the state, not in some, either current or future state agencies.
Okay. I'm going to go to Representative Tarr, and then I'm going to ask the auditor to come up and ask you some questions in a second, Chris. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have similar concerns about the functions of these boards as they exist today. And for example, my most recent experience working with a soil and water conservation district was on invasive species removal. And to my knowledge, that's some of the really important work they're doing right now that has very little, or if anything, to do with agriculture. So in thinking about that, I'm curious what your thoughts are on how the BAC as it exists today, with the primary function of approving the loans, now would have this advisory role. And currently, that kind of policy advisement is done by staff at the department. And so how do you envision those entities working together, and what happens if conflicts arise about sort of what each entity thinks are the appropriate avenues to increase agriculture in the state?
Representative Tarr, through the chair. Well, so I guess we crave more input on agricultural policy from the current Board of Agriculture, and I actually have several times half-jokingly threatened the current board with making them meet 16 times a year instead of their statutorily mandated 8, just because I want every other meeting to be there to help me with agricultural issues. Of course, I never do that. They're too hardworking as it is, but yet the point is that we do crave their input on agricultural issues. There are a lot of big issues in Alaska right now. The governor has pulled up his food resources working group to get the state agencies to work closer together on these issues. And I mean, I can spend the whole committee hearing outlining all the issues that we're looking at. I think a classic example might be agricultural land disposals. We've been selling land for agricultural purposes for a long time in Alaska right now. It's worked really well for the most part. there are issues, there are problems, such as very difficult for someone with a piece of agricultural land to get a loan to build a residential dwelling on there. So, you know, we're going outside the board. We're getting working groups together to advise us on this, but it would be great to have the board of ag to go to and say, okay, I want you guys to brainstorm and figure out some ideas on how we can modernize Alaska's agricultural land sale program as an example. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's really, I think, kind of my, you know, my wish here in all of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answered your question there.
Follow up at this point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so do you feel like the language is written in this bill would accomplish that, or would it be more appropriate even then to be considering changes just to the BAC as it exists now in statute, but increasing their ability to provide input to the department?
The way this bill is written right now, I mean, for the purposes of giving me input on agricultural policy, I think this bill is fine, because that's exactly what it does. It frees up the current Board of Agriculture to do exactly that. So that part really is pretty clear in here to me.
Good deal. You know, we've got some good horsepower from the Division of Ledge Audit about some of these questions, the relative responsibilities and functions. So with that, I'd like to invite Chris Curtis, the Director of Ledge Audit, to come up and help enlighten us as to the relative functions and how they might work together under a new construct.
Hello, for the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. And as I understood it, my role was to go over the audits, the recent audit of the ag funds. We did an audit. It's dated June 24, 2013. The purpose of the audit was to examine the fund's performance and administration and compare fund administration to other loan programs and industry best practices. The goal of the evaluation was to identify how the fund's performance could be improved and how efficiencies could be gained, with an emphasis on whether the fund should be administered by a different state agency. So very much on point. As I understand it, a copy of the audit is in your meeting packet, and I will be referring to various pages as I go through my brief overview. The audit noted many instances of administrative deficiencies and opportunities for increased efficiency. Based on these findings, we concluded that moving ARLF, the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, moving its administration and loan decisions to the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development's Division of Economic Development may improve the loan program's efficiency and effectiveness and help ensure the fund's future solvency. The detailed conclusions begin on page 13 of the audit. We concluded that ARLF's fiscal condition is the result of agricultural policy decisions made over the past 30 years by both the executive and legislative branches of government. Many lending and management decisions were made in favor of supporting the agricultural industry rather than maintaining the fund's fiscal health. Since inception, ARLF's fund equity has declined by 69%. On a more positive note, our audit did conclude that ARLF's default rates were reasonable at the program level. Their default rates are included in Appendix A of the report, beginning on page 27. We found their default rates ranged between 1 and 5% over the past 5 years. The audit identified numerous administrative deficiencies that, if not corrected, will likely contribute to future loan losses. We list out these deficiencies starting on the bottom of page 14 of the audit. Examples of deficiencies include ineffective and inefficient processes for loan evaluation and approval, property management, and loan management. Some of the more troublesome deficiencies were additional loans given to borrowers who experienced substantial financial losses and had difficulty meeting prior loan obligations, and new loans given to borrowers without prudent consideration of prior ARLF loan defaults. Additionally, the audit found that the regulations do not promote fiscally responsible decisions on a consistent basis. Regulations should be improved by incorporating industry best practices. We compared ARLF to other loan programs, and we found that boards similar to the Board of Agriculture and Conservation, the BAC board, are not commonly used for lending decisions. It is more common for lending decisions to be made by professional lending staff or by a committee with lending expertise. We also noted inefficiencies in RLIF's administration. These are discussed in the report on page 17. Currently, RLIF administrators do not use an automated loan system for their loan processing, monitoring, or reporting. We also found that RLIF administrators have not obtained USDA Farm Service Agency loan guarantees for RLIF loans to mitigate potential loan losses even though the program is eligible. On page 23, we have a recommendation for the legislature to consider moving RLIF to DCCED's Division of Economic Development. This division currently administers 13 state loan-run loan programs, and we believe the fund would benefit from the economies of scale and automated loan system offered by the division. We also believe the fund would benefit from loan expertise and standardization. But regardless of whether the loan fund is moved, we made two recommendations to what we called the fund administrators, RLIF administrators. On page 24, we recommend that RLIF administrators amend regulations to promote industry best practices. Currently, the regulations do not include criteria for approving loans and do not provide sufficient guidelines for evaluating collateral. We also recommend RLIF administrators pursue disposal of business properties and revise property leasing rates to provide a return on RLIF assets. RLIF currently owns two active business properties, the Mount McKinley Meat and Sausage Company, which is a slaughtering facility, and the Alaska Farm Cooperative. Operating businesses is not within RLIF's statutory authority. RLIF's statutory objective is to promote the more rapid development of agriculture as an industry by means of long-term low-interest loans. Alaska statute states that property acquired by RLIF through foreclosure, default, or other means should be disposed of to maximize the state's return. Instead of pursuing disposal of the slaughtering facility and the cooperative, policy decisions continue to be made to operate or maintain ownership of these businesses and to support the agricultural industry. The slaughtering facility continues to incur annual losses to the fund, and the cooperative provides no financial return. The cumulative effect is a reduction of RLIF assets. So we recommend RLIF administrators pursue disposal of the business properties and revise leasing rates to provide an adequate return on RLIF assets.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Questions for the auditor? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see the three recommendations and some of the report conclusions that are posted. I guess we have a big policy question about whether to combine two commissions, but I think it's separate to the question about ALRF and the Board of Ag. If the Board of Ag were to, or if the ALRF administration were to be done under the Department of Community, Commerce, and Economic Development, and if recommendations 2 and 3 dealing with the administrators and their regulation updates were made strictly in the board, the current board, would that suffice to basically? Would that be enough to get a cleaner audit in the next go around?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, can I characterize what you just said to make sure I understand?
Sure.
Are you saying that if the recommendations 2 and 3, which have to do with disposing of business properties and amending regulations, were to occur, and the back board continued to play the role in approving the loans?
If the fund administration were to go through through commerce, would that make it a cleaner audit in the future?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair. Our audit concludes that I want to echo the comments from Deputy Commissioner. The BAC Board is a very hardworking group of intelligent people, and we were very impressed by their hard work. But they do operate under competing priorities, supporting the agricultural industry and maintaining the fund's health. And this tension, so to speak, has been there for many, many years. And we have been critical of the Ag Funds administration over audits over the last 20, possibly 30 years into the mid-80s. And we continue to have finding after finding about administration of the fund. Now, recommendation 2, I believe, has to do with improving regulations. And if there were more guidance as far as the approval process in regulation, I believe that would address. And if industry best practice could be incorporated into regulations, I can't imagine why that wouldn't improve the process quite a bit. Recommendation 3 has to do with selling the business properties or disposing of the business properties, and that's just purely, in our view, a practice that's not authorized in statute. The Mount McKinley and Sausage Company loses $118,000 a year on average. So that's where that recommendation came from.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know, have they tried to sell that or anything like that? And they just can't, or what?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, it is our understanding that they have tried to dispose of the property, and the last time was 2006, although they require that it be continued to be operated and accept all animals. There's a few caveats. They had no responsive bidders in 2006.
Representative Olson had a question. Sorry.
Well, I've got a couple, but they're short.
There you go.
Chris, you said you had about 30 years worth of audits.
Representative Olson, through the chair, I believe the earliest one was 1984.
What is the trend? What does the most recent audit look like? Is it better or worse or about the same? Or
Representative Olson, through the chair, we have many of the same findings as we've had over the years.
Going back 30 years?
Yes. On there is a footnote, I believe, in this recommendation number 1, footnote 20, that identifies some of the old findings that we again reiterate.
Second question, probably my last. Would 5 years be an adequate amount of time to clean this up under the proposed combination of responsibilities?
Representative Olson, through the chair, if you're asking if recommendation 1, 2, and 3 were all addressed, would 5 years be enough time to see the improvements?
Through the chair, a reasonable amount of time?
Through the chair, certainly. I believe that would be more than sufficient time to see an improvement.
One last one, and you can probably see where I'm going.
Representative Wilson.
We don't have the sunset, I believe, now, but at this point in time, but if we're redoing the structure of it, we could probably put a reasonable sunset in, so we're not going to be going through, or not us, but somebody's not going to be going through this again in the next 30 years. Would that be reasonable?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, there certainly hasn't been a lack of audits over the years. Whether there's been any improvements as a result of the audit is debatable. If the improvements were actually implemented, I think that would be plenty of time, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Olson, let me make sure I understand. Are you recommending a 5-year sunset on the combined board, or basically giving the order to the direction to implement?
If we go with the combined board on the new board,
then yes, it would be a 5-year sunset.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not offering it at this point in time because we need to see what we have in front of us.
Gotcha.
At the end.
Gotcha. Thank you. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure this is brought out, you mentioned the capital in the fund has been steadily depleting since the inception of the fund. Were those hits to the fund, were they the fault of legislative action, executive branch action, or simply mismanagement by the BAC?
Representative Foggy, through the chair, page 13 outlines exactly how what funds, how they got out of the fund and why. You've got $29 million defaulted loans and contracts written off. So I would say that's a result of combination, approval, administration, economy. $13 million were used to fund Division of Ag operations. That's a policy decision on how to use the funds, not reflective of the administration. $10 million were appropriated back to the general fund. So just simply taking, and then lastly, $3.5 million was used to purchase and run the Mount McKinley Sausage Company.
Representative Johnson.
I thought that was repossessed, basically. They purchased it?
Representative Johnson, through the chair. It was built in the mid-'80s with a $2 million general fund loan. I believe somehow the Ag Fund absorbed that loan, and when it quickly went under, they were second on the loan. So the creditor that was top on the loan, it was sold off, and the Ag Fund actually bought it. They did not receive this property by means of a loan default.
A follow-up? Just a Representative Kawasaki, then Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this isn't your, it's more of a policy call. We're talking about bringing two different boards together and an administration of the fund moving to a different area. But isn't it conceivable that, I mean, that this board could come up with similarly poor regulations dealing with the ALRF or similarly bad disposal of business property regulations?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I really don't have a comment on that as far as what could happen. Our audit only looked at what we're always looking back. Auditors are always looking at history, what did happen, and making recommendations to improve.
Representative Walker?
Wait, follow up on that.
Go ahead, Representative Kawasaki.
I mean, so in your opinion, does it improve the overall performance of the Board of Agriculture and the ALRF if two boards were combined into one to make those administrative decisions now?
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, we did not consider merging boards. We have really no opinion on whether that is a good or a bad decision. We actually had a very hard time writing this report because the answers, there could be many different answers to the problem. Mm-hmm. And as long as whatever answer is put forth was effective to address the problem, there's probably multiple ways of fixing what we have. When we looked at all of the deficiencies, and regardless of how well the Board of Agriculture and how hard they worked and how much we admired their work, the deficiencies we saw led us to the conclusion that administration should be moved. However, we did debate long and hard about other options because there are certainly many.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And my understanding is we're going to merge the boards to do a different function, but the lending and the financial aspects of this are going to Commerce. Is that the way I understand this is written?
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fund will operate essentially the same as it does now. Applications will be made through the Division of Ag. Staff in the Division of Ag will help the applicant prepare the packet and put it together. When that packet is ready to go forward for approval, instead of going to the board, it will go to an individual at Department of Commerce. The bill allows for the new Board of Ag to set the rules, if you will, on the qualifications for that person in Department of Commerce and any other requirements that they want to place on the application process. So it's simply the approval of the packet that is going to be prepared the same way as it has been, using the same facilities and people, but under rules established by the new board and somebody else outside, away from the board, will be making the approval process. If there's an appeal, it goes back to the board.
Can I follow up just
to that specific point?
Yeah, it seems to me like we're having the same people do the same work that have had a dismal report and the check written by a different person.
Is that a question or a comment? Or?
Well, I don't see we're making any changes except somebody writes a check. So it's Commerce writes a check, everybody else, the approval, the process, the regulations, everything else are the same way we've gotten reports, bad reports for 30 years.
And writes the rules.
That Commerce has to follow to write the check.
And again, that's a policy call that we felt was in the best interest of agriculture.
Great. Representative Tarr has a question, and Olson, and then we're going to be out of time, probably.
Okay, thank you. And on that point, I guess as it was described to me, I thought that the initial approval would be through the Division of Economic Development, and it would be an appeals process that would go back to the board. So that I guess, would change that. And I'm just curious, you know, we manage several other funds. When you're auditing those other funds, is there a certain default rate that you don't want to exceed? $29 million sounds like a lot, but I think as a percentage of the overall amount that's been lended, it's not a terribly high percentage. Without that number in front of me, but is there a standard to use for that to say the fund is being managed in a sound way?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, we do not look at default rates unless it's part of a special audit. And in this particular instance, we look to comparable loan programs as a basis for what would be reasonable. The economy over the last 5 years has been very volatile, so what would be reasonable? Well, let's look to the other programs. And what we found is the other programs had very similar default rates as the Ag Fund did. And so we concluded that the Ag Fund had a reasonable rate.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Chris, are there any current board members that are in default on any loans or have any loans written off?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I have no idea. We definitely looked at everything in summary form, and we didn't get down to the detail of who the specific folks were in default. I could ask an auditor in Anchorage whether they knew that or not. However, I would be reluctant to do that because that would not be in the report and has not come out of the LBNA committee.
And I'm not curious, or follow up?
Oh.
I'm not curious about names, but just if we have any and maybe the amounts.
We can look but into not, not getting that, that. All right, okay, we can look at getting that information to you in a memo form to the committee.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. With that, oh, follow-up, last question. With that, it's 3 o'clock. We have one more question, Representative Wilson.
Just one real question, and Commissioner Fogles. One of the letters against was concerned that there was somebody in your department that worked with the board and worked with the people with the soil and whatnot, and is that person still going to be available to them as it always was, or will that go away?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I think we have about 40% of one position that's currently funded in the NRCDB budget, and that through our fiscal notes, that the total budget for the NRCDB would be transferred over to the Division of Agriculture, and so the money for that position would stay on. So, yeah.
But there's no guarantee that specific individual would continue to work. But
No. But that specific individual that's currently in that position is very talented and highly regarded by the board, and we would hope she would stay on.
Very good. With that, it is 3:04, and we may have you back again next week, but we're going to have this bill up again and have public testimony on it. I believe it's scheduled for Monday. Appreciate the members' questions, fruitful discussion, and we'll look forward to hearing it next on Monday. We're adjourned at 3:04.